This week, students at California's Santa Monica College tried to enter a trustees meeting to protest a plan to charge more for about 50 popular classes. The school's president says they need the rate hike from $36 per credit hour to $180 per credit hour to meet demand. The students say if that happens, they won't be able to attend classes they need to go on to a four-year school or job training programs. The state has ordered the plan on hold while they figure out legal issues. But meanwhile, our next guest says another consideration should be, will students have enough money to eat? Wick Sloan is an adjunct professor of English at Bunker Hill Community College here in Boston. He's been on here now before to talk about teaching at midnight in order to accommodate working students. And now he's written a provocative essay in InsideHigherEd.com about his plan to pay students to study so they can have money to buy food. You want to find out more. But first, Wick, I can hear someone saying, oh, come on, how hungry can a community college student be? How bad is it?
Well, Robin, many students have said that, and I'm speaking from my experience in talking from other people, and so I'm not making universal claims. I'm claiming what I've seen in 5 years and what my colleagues have seen. And many students are literally trading textbooks for food. They're spending for their own children's meals instead of theirs. One of my colleagues, when I first got to Bunker Hill at five years ago, said, never miss a chance to feed students. So I started bringing food to classes, and the cookies went too fast, and so we added sandwiches. And I can only watch the food go and see what happens.
And again, I'm being devil's advocate here, because I can just hear people saying, oh, college kids, they're always eating. You know, they're, you know, parents deliver snack bags. You're talking about community college. So tell me more about, you know, you've seen students crying.
Community college students are very misunderstood as a portion of American higher education. There's about 8 million of them. More than half of the students in college are in community colleges, and these are people who usually work 40 plus hours a week. They're trying to take three or four courses. They have long commutes back and forth. They have rent to pay. The Gates Foundation has identified this population as one of the highest need but highest potential public investments we can make to keep the economy strong. What's misunderstood in our public policy debates about college today is that someone who goes to school for 4 years and stays in a dorm has become the non-traditional student. There are only 10% of the nation's colleges are private, but most people's vision of college is going to school and walking down the dining hall that you've already paid for and grabbing a bag of Doritos and going and having a good time. And that's just not what's happening out there.
In fact, you write that you spend more time helping students get food stamps than the creative writing.
I do. And again, to be clear, I'm not a full-time teacher, but the students don't realize they qualify for food stamps. Here in the state of Massachusetts, they've just made a very user-friendly website called Getting SNAP, and that helps students sign up for food stamps. And I've referred more students to that site and helped them sign up than I have referred them to the Hacker Grammar Guide, which is the more at the core of what I do.
That's the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, SNAP, here in Massachusetts. You went to a technology conference, to this high-tech conference in education, and people were talking about all these innovations, and you said, well, the best innovation I did was direct young people to this SNAP website.
Again, that's where the public perception is out of sight. The top colleges and universities, the Harvards, the University of Michigans, they face their own important challenges, but they don't realize what's going on elsewhere. And as we make public policy, we tend to think they are what everything looks like, when in fact, they're not. So at this conference, people were talking about online learning and all this, and I was kind of from the other end of the spectrum, and I said, well, I am using technology a lot, but mostly I'm helping people sign up for food stamps.
Yeah.
That brought things to kind of a halt in the room for a little while.
I bet it did. You talk about another meeting with a sympathetic state official and some other professors, very thoughtful, provocative conversation about college, but it was about opening a food bank.
It was at lunch with a very good, again, person here in Massachusetts. I know you go out across the nation. They're very innovative on their social service programs. And three of us were having lunch with a state official from there. And I looked at around the table, and my colleagues were two of the best professors I know at teaching community college students. I just shook my head and said, why are the three of us sitting here talking about opening a food bank?
Yeah, well, because of this need that you see. So, you know, why is this? Because there's a $978 million federal work-study program now. Your idea would be to tap into that and take some money from that and flip it and make a study work program. But stay with the work-study program first. This is where kids have jobs while they go to school, and the money from those jobs, and in some cases, it can be working in the college library, doing color commentary for a team. You know, these jobs are, you know, are pretty good jobs for students, and the money from that helps them with things like books, rent, and food. Why isn't that enough?
It certainly does all those things you say, Robin, and I wish we had the luxury to still apply those dollars to the tasks that you're describing. But the needs of students have changed. The work-study program came to being in the 1960s with President Lyndon Johnson's Magnificent Higher Education Act, and that included the Pell Grants and some federal loans and then the work-study. And back in the 1960s, this was a program that could take people who don't have a lot of money to Princeton or to Stanford. The maximum Pell Grant hasn't grown now. It's only $5,500. That will get you to community college, but it won't get you to a state college where the tuition can be $10,000 or $15,000, or a private college where it can be $25,000. What's happened now is that those jobs worked because those students had food back in the 1960s, but we're dealing with an entirely different population today.
Well, but why? I mean, there have been many comments after your article appeared in Inside Higher Ed with your proposal that some of the monies be taken from those work-study programs and flipped so that kids are paid to study. And I want to ask you about that. But one of the people who left a comment after your essay writes, well, aren't these students starving because they made poor decisions with their grant and loan money?
We're talking about a huge population of millions of students, so you can find examples of everything you want in them. So I'm sure there might even be a million or 2 million who did make bad decisions, and that's the consequence of it. I believe that there's a million or maybe 2 million who didn't. They're the ones I'm talking about. So I'm not saying we should do this for every single student, but it needs to be qualified.
Well, and let's get to your plan. You say take $100 million or so from the work-study $978 million budget and flip it. Instead of a work-study, make it a study work. How would it work?
My idea is that students would go to a supervised place, maybe in a public library, maybe at their campus. They'd have a card to swipe. There'd be somebody there watching to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that they would go in and study. They'd swipe their card on the way in and swipe it on the way out, and that they would be paid the following week $10 an hour for the time they had spent studying in the prior week. I capped that at $1,200. I think that's about as much as the work-study cap is at the moment. And also, we want to help as many people as possible, and I recognize there are constraints on federal spending. So,
okay. We have a lot of questions. That's Wick Sloan, adjunct professor at Bunker Hill Community College here in Massachusetts. He says he has a plan to help students make ends meet. And it's something he came up with after meeting so many community college students that were hungry. Now, we've spoken to Wick before about a class he teaches at midnight. The school still offers these midnight classes to accommodate students who work late. Many work more than one job. Wick says, how about a food bank to help some of these students? And he also wants to flip the work-study program. These are federal dollars that help pay students by paying them to work. He says, how about flipping the program, pay them to study? Literally give them a card to swipe at a study hall, which would then track their hours studying and pay them for that with a cap. And Wick, you say this money could be used to be spent on food, but also you make the point that for a lot of the adults that come through community colleges, that 2 or 3 extra hours of studying, as opposed to working at the corner store to make a little extra money, that extra time studying does what?
That can be the difference between success and failure. That can be the difference between mastering college algebra and not. Robin, I came at this to figure out what these students really need. I've been the chief financial officer of a state university system, and I just kept going to too many meetings where people were talking about access to higher education, but nobody knew what these students needed. So I decided just to go work in a community college, teach them and meet them and see what their needs are. And I've done that for 5 years now. And it appears to me that nothing is more important than every extra hour we can create in their lives to study. And my colleagues agree with that, that's the hardest part of their life, is that they need time to study.
Well, and we mentioned food banks, and you thinking, well, maybe we should start a food bank too. It sounds as if it would be the combination. I mean, we know schools have food banks. Kingsborough Community College in New York City has its own food bank. The White House recently honored the University of Arkansas for its food pantry. It sounds as if you could provide the food and you could provide the study time. The combination could go a long way for you.
I think it could go a very long way. And I think what I've tried to do is I've put myself in there to figure out if we could come up with better public policy, because there isn't any. And I think what I keep finding again and again is that we, the people, feel overwhelmed by the scale of problems of educating so many people. We think that what it costs is $50,000 a year times four to send 8 million people to Harvard, which would be nice to have that much money. But I've found that there's a lot of very small steps we can make that can help these students survive. Their motivation is rocket fuel. As you said before, these are students who will come to school at midnight. This semester I teach at 7 a.m. One student asked if he could be late because his shift at work had changed from 11 to 7 a.m. in the morning, and he couldn't quite get there at 7 a.m., so he gets there at 7:15. There are a lot of these people who really will use this help very well.
Is this something that, you know, people in the trenches are seeing? Are you hearing this from other schools? Yeah, I'm seeing hunger.
I knew of some community colleges and college campuses where hunger was an issue. Since this column appeared, many people have written me about seeing just this and saying it's about time somebody put this issue out there. One woman from a university in Illinois said that she feeds her students all the time. And she said that a colleague had discovered that a student was homeless and had nothing to eat. The colleague took the student home for the night and fed him and ended up sanctioned by the NCAA because you're not allowed to give special treatment to athletes. So that's where we are in the public debate on this issue.
You are one of those professors, too, slipping food cards, gift cards to stores, to students. When you have classes over spring break, the classrooms are closed, so you bring them into the cafeteria at 7:30 in the morning, buy them all breakfast, slip a sandwich to a student who cries when she gets it.
And I think the point, however, is these are things that I've learned from amazing colleagues, Robin. I'm an example of this, but I'm by no means alone. And one of the professors in community college, this is what they take for granted that they're going to be doing. Everything I've discussed in the column is what I've learned from the people who've preceded me. This is very well known in community colleges.
And I'm sure there are some grade school teachers nodding as well. But by the way, you know, this idea that you have of, instead of having students work, which takes them away from their studies, pay them for at least a few hours of study hall studying. It's the same money that comes through the study program, so it's not adding to that money. You have some backup on this from Ed Labs at Harvard. They did some studies. There's a new book, Carrots and Sticks. You know, this idea of paying students on any level to do anything is appalling to some people, but what do they find at Ed Labs?
This is different. They're rewarding students to study. If you get a 3 or better on the advanced placement exam, you get this much. If you get a 4, you get this much. If you get a 5, you get that much. These are students who were younger, so they're not supporting families, but Ed Labs at Harvard has found that this works. There's another program called Oportunidas in Mexico that aims at exactly this, of supporting people to go to school. And what these judgments are, that a student's job is to create, in the lingo of the times, intellectual capital. You're paying the student to create skills that they can apply at a job, and that's a good investment, and that's a better investment than having the student mow the lawn or shelve books.
That's Wick Sloan, adjunct professor of English at Bunker Hill Community College here in the Boston area. He's also a columnist for Inside Higher Ed, and he's recently written about coming across students hungry at school, and he says, why don't we combine a couple of concerns, pay them to study, and also maybe help them get some food through things like food bank and that pay. Wick Sloan, thank you so much for sharing some of your observations with us.
My pleasure.